And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Residents at the Glory Hall, Juneau's shelter, are working hard to plant vegetables in their community garden. Staff say the garden brings healing as well as new growth to long-term residents. At Juneau's shelter, Liz Landis carts wheelbarrows of dirt to the 20 raised garden beds she helped build last summer. A few of the residents shovel the soil into the beds while others sit enjoying the sunshine. Landis calls herself a freelance farmer. She helps build community gardens throughout Southeast Alaska. Last year, she came to Juneau to help build a garden at the Glory Hall's Teal Street shelter.
I shamelessly cried when I saw photos of the garden in full splendor last summer. It was amazing. I couldn't believe that in the first year it could be as successful as it was.
Landis said the garden thrived under the care of Glory Hall residents. And it wasn't just the food she planted that she saw bloom. One of the residents, William Hunt, took the lead on the garden. He wrote about it in an essay for the Glory Hall's online bulletin last year. He said, "This garden literally saved my life. It gave me something to believe in again, a purpose and a calling." Landis says she wants everyone to take the power of growing food into their own hands. And Hunt's story stuck with her.
It changed his physical health. It changed his mental outlook. In the 2 weeks I was here, and then I heard it continued on throughout the summer.
Luke Roman, the Glory Hall's deputy director, said he watched Hunt get stronger and healthier while cutting way back on his drinking. And when one of Hunt's doctors saw him later that summer, he didn't recognize him.
I mean, I don't know if anyone had ever really seen anything like that. It was like a Bible story or something almost.
Yeah, that moved me.
After last summer, Hunt moved away, but Landis said one resident has already made plans for this year's garden.
Yeah, what's going where?
I don't know. I know that this bed, Beverly requested tomatoes and peppers.
Beverly.
She put some heart into it yesterday. And that's really all that's planned at this point.
Glory Hall resident Beverly Pacheco says she's been gardening for years, and she's grateful that she can do it here.
It speaks to my heart and soul.
As a vegetarian, Pacheco is excited about all the food she can help grow. The Glory Hall will use it to make salads and other fresh foods.
Potatoes, chives, nasturtiums, they're tasty. They taste like radishes, actually, kind of a little bit, but, you know, they're pretty, too.
For now, Pacheco is spreading topsoil and compost, anticipating the vegetables to come. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Two indigenous stories came to life on stage at Ketchikan Charter School. Students turned Killer Whale Eyes and How Devil's Club Came to Be into short plays featuring handmade props and form line the students learned from a visiting artist. Karabidi's Reagan Miller has more.
Paddling a cardboard canoe, the student actors are exploring the ocean. They're looking for their classmate, the one who turned into a killer whale. Pods of hand-painted cardboard orcas bob and weave in an ocean of royal blue cloth shaken by the students. In another play, a student fights a monster who is stealing their tribe shaman. The heroine visits the Thunderbird people and defeats the giant.
I've taken them all hostage and I'm prepared to feed.
How dare you!
Grr! The stories are part of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Baby Raven Reads program. Holly Kanoyer is an art teacher at Charter School. Her class designed the props, and drama students wrote the scripts. She applauds the students' work.
Look at their form line.
Student Amelia Leffler helped make a lot of the props. Leffler says her favorite of the two plays is How Devil's Club Came to Be. That story follows Raven's niece as she battles a giant who had been taking the village shaman. She discovers Devil's Club and its medicinal properties along the way.
And it's sort of fun to see how different cultures are.
Riley Presnell also helped bring the scenes to life.
I think I really like painting. I really like painting the canoe. I really like painting the blanket.
Kai Clevenger, a Tlingit student, is the daughter of Kevin Clevenger, the school's artist in residence. She helped create the form line that appears on the props. The seventh grader says it's important to her to see her culture taught and celebrated in school.
I like how my culture is communicating with other, like, stuff now, and, like, how my culture is, like, out there now.
Student Ryan Bowling also worked backstage. He says the fact that they're traditional stories is what makes it special.
I feel like the
like, Native stories need to get out there more than they are.
Bringing the stories to the stage was a community effort, Knoyer says, with help from Ketchikan's tribe staff. Fourth and fifth graders were able to pitch in, too. Knoyer says the school's artists in residence had taught the younger kids about formline design, which came in handy.
And when we ran out of time to work on our props, fifth grade and fourth grade did our designs on the paddles. They worked on the button blankets. They worked on the designs for all of the hats. And it was all on account of working with Kevin Clevenger that they knew how to do this. They were really excited to participate.
That was one of the most satisfying parts of the production process, Knoyer says.
It was really cool to see that just that ripple effect of a really great program came into play in our little theater project.
The students performed their plays for classmates and community members, including the staff of Ketchikan's local theater. They received a rowdy chorus of applause. In Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Anchorage's legal department is working on an update of the city's policies for clearing unauthorized encampments. The city's current codes generally prohibit camping on public land and lay out a process for notifying campers beforehand and temporarily storing their belongings after. But so far this year, Anchorage authorities have been letting camps stand. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea has more.
In a boggy area off of Anchorage's heavily used Chester Creek Trail, there are piles of abandoned belongings and trashed campsites. Nathaniel Hicks Jr. says those are leftovers from when city officials cleared campsites a while back when the city had more shelter capacity. The 1994 graduate of Bartlett High School is living out of a lean-to made of tarps and sticks nearby.
Well, the policemen down here acting as if we're just not fit for even being down here. Not even fit for being down here. I don't want to corral us.
Notices are still stapled to trees around the trail, warning that campsites will be cleared, but they date back to November. Since then, a lot of campers have settled right back in, and it's unclear how long they'll be able to stay. City officials aren't clearing camps right now, partially because of a policy decision to shutter a mass shelter and instead deliver some basic services at camps, and partially because of legal paralysis. The approach leaves campers, like Hicks, in limbo, and their immediate neighbors frustrated and fearful about bad behavior impacting their quality of life, security, and economic interests.
The problem is there's a sort of a fuzzy line with Martin v. Boise.
That's Municipal Attorney Ann Helzer briefing an assembly committee about the administration's camp abatement policy update. Martin v. Boise is a 2018 federal court case where the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals reasoned that punishing people for camping when they've got nowhere else to go amounts to unconstitutional, cruel, and unusual punishment.
Martin v. Boise is complicated, and it's been misunderstood. It's not a flat prohibition on the municipality's ability to abate when there is no shelter space, but it's also sort of unclear what the nuances are there.
Right now, there are hundreds more people experiencing homelessness than there are shelter spaces in Anchorage. Experts estimate up to 800 people may be sleeping outdoors. Shelter spaces do open up regularly as people move into more stable housing or otherwise leave, but long wait lists mean they're quickly filled. The city attorneys at the briefing said the city is clearing camps in some limited situations, like if someone is trespassing or if they're blocking a sidewalk. But they said the mayor's administration is trying to come up with policies that are legally enforceable that slightly expand on that. The policy update is still in progress. Helzer says she's aiming to have the proposal in front of the assembly for its meeting Tuesday night.
Just so everyone understands, we're literally looking at constitutional battles, whatever we do.
Assemblymember Kevin Cross questioned if enforcing rules against camping is the right approach.
It's not the camping that's a problem. It's the trash, it's the drugs, it's the broken bottles, it's the yelling, it's running naked down the street, it's excreting freely all over everything around you. It's things that are already illegal.
The city's homelessness coordinator, Alexis Johnson, responded.
I will tell you that a lot of the things that you have listed do not result in like jail time. They just result in a citation. And there's no max amount of citations that someone can get.
Finding people who don't have the money for housing doesn't get you anywhere.
I can understand your frustration, sir.
You might ask me to grow hair.
Cross is bald. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
And here in Juneau, it's currently 57 degrees and rather sunny. Tonight, the low is 43 degrees. Tomorrow, the high will be 55, and it might be a little sunny then, too. Wednesday, we might get some rain with a high around 60 degrees, and that looks like it'll carry over through the rest of the week. This is KTOO.